right, here for another episode of Advantage Connors, as always, with my co-host, Jimmy Connors. How are you today, sir? Getting a nice, fresh sip of Pepsi there before you get going.
I gotta get that little jolt of my, you know, my sugar going through me so we can talk about some good. Yeah, there you go. We're ready. But
I got mine, too.
We got some good things to talk about. A lot of good action.
Right. A lot of stuff going on since we last spoke. We had the FedEx Finals that came through, and a big tennis tournament in New York City that I know you're a fan of in the past. What was it that stuck out to you as being your favorite storyline?
Well, first of all, New York City is my favorite storyline. You know, the city and the fans and you know, it's funny back when I was playing, Brett. You know, with the airplanes flying over and the crowd moving around, and you know, it wasn't the Wimbledon tradition. You know, people were up and scattering and noisy and all that. You know, not many people like that. I loved it. You know, now it's funny to see a lot of the players now how they're trying to embrace the crowd, you know, because they see what that crowd can do for them. That crowd wins them matches, you know, sometimes when they're not supposed to, you know. So to embrace that crowd, you know, I saw the storyline for me. There's two storylines. One is the women and the finals that they had, the two teenagers and the way they got there and their route to get to the finals, but also the match that they played in the finals. And then Djokovic going for the Grand Slam, you know. But let's talk about the ladies, if you don't mind. First, I want to say no Serena, right. No American really, you know, past the fourth round. You know, so
there's the only American making it to the second week.
Yeah. You know, so, you know, that's a big change, you know, from my perspective that, you know, usually, you know, if you look back, you know, with the women that we've had, you know, Sloane Stephens and Madison Keys and help me out with the young lady.
Serena and Kenin.
So, I mean, you know, for them not to make it into the second week, you know, was to me was a little disappointing. Yeah. But the Fernandez and help me out with the pronouncing.
Raducanu.
Right, Raducanu. You know, the storyline there was amazing because Fernandez, the draw that she had and the players she beat to get to the final. Right. And then Raducanu went through the qualifying, gets to the finals, doesn't lose a set, you know, right. Going through the qualifying, you know, you look at that. Has that ever happened before? But the two young ladies, and I'm calling them young ladies because, you know, you're 42, your sister's 37, you know, they're 18, 19 years old. It's, you know, for me, you know, it's like grandkids for me, yeah. You know, but the thing about it is the way they handle themselves. You know, especially, you know, after the match and the tennis that they played and the personality that they had, the way they engaged the crowd, the way they brought them into it and wanted them to be a big part of it. That's what tennis is.
Yeah.
You know, that's what New York tennis is. And what I remember about it when I was playing and to see that again from those two young ladies, man, that was spectacular.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool too, especially on both sides to kind of have the teenagers on both sides. We've talked about Fernandez before on this show. I'm a pretty big fan of hers. She hadn't been playing good at all coming into the Open, having a couple early exits mm-hmm. in the lead ups. But I mean, for her size, I mean, she just thumps it flat out. And then you see that she's, you know, not that tall, not that big, where some of these players are over 6 feet and she's out there competing. And like you said, her draw, she beat Svitolina, Sabalenka, she beat Osaka, Kerber. You know, that's like two former slam champions, two other top five players on her way to the final. But like you said, Raducanu is the story, got to be the story of the tournament. 18 years old, it's only her second main draw tournament, I think. Mm. And when's her first, right? So she goes through the qualifying, 10 matches. Do you know how many games, not sets, how many games she lost in the tournament?
Well, I know she lost no sets. So, I mean, you know, that has to be crazy.
Yeah, only 50 games in 10 matches.
That's unbelievable. But you know what I liked about both of them? Fernandez, the way she played, you know, she's aggressive. She's up there. She takes the ball early, mm-hmm. you know, and both of them, yeah. you know, they weren't holding back. They got to the finals of a Grand Slam, both of them. That's their first. And the way they played with no fear, you know, with everything that was riding on the line, they went out and they weren't, you're not going to win Grand Slam tournaments by somebody giving it to you. You're going to have to go and take it, right. you know, and both of them weren't afraid to do that. They you know, listen, you got to take opportunities like that when you get them. They don't come along every day,
no.
you know, so, you know, to take advantage of it, like Rita Kenu, first of all, wins the tournament and geez, deservedly so with what she went through to get there. But both of them, the way they played and the way they went about it was pretty spectacular.
Right. If you want, the camera's down on the left. You can look down. Yeah, down that way.
Is this okay?
That's good. Yeah, I thought it was cool too. But I wanted to speak on something you already said that's surprising to me is you said the crowds were back and the players were missing him. And, you know, I think everyone was missing him. The people at home watching last year felt a little weird and creepy. With no fans in the stands, but
right.
I want to get your take on what about the two people who took advantage of it the most, at least on the women's side, are two teenagers with the least amount of experience in the whole draw, let's say. And they're the ones who figured out a way to harness the crowd and use it to their advantage and ride this wave all the way to the finals and championship. Where you think that would be like a savvy veteran move, somebody who's been around and knows how to use the crowd and get them on their side.
Yeah, good point. It's a good point. Maybe they're young enough to, you know, to think that, you know, that they still really love that they're not that the others don't love the game, but the way, you know, they feel about what they're doing and the privilege it is to go out and be able to play, you know, tennis for a living and to play at that level and to have a chance to win a Grand Slam and the appreciation they have for the game itself. Not that the others don't, you know, but everybody can't be like that, Brad.
Fearlessness? Do you think it's a little like being young and you're just fearless and you're just like, this is fun, I'm having fun, the crowd's into it, I'm just going to go? You know, where you're older, maybe you start getting in your head, I got sponsors and expectations, and where there's these two young kids who are like, hey, I'm only 19, I got nothing to lose.
I would like to say that the veterans should understand more what the crowd can do for them. You know, I was 39 playing there, and, you know, I mean, you know, grabbing that crowd won, you know, helped me get to the semifinals. I mean, to, you know, to play that kind of tennis and to come back from 5-2 in the fifth set against Krickstein, and, you know, and to be able to, you know, produce that kind of tennis. You know, that crowd and the enthusiasm that they bring, but you can't fake that. You can't give that to somebody and say, okay, I want you to bring the crowd in now and make them a part of this. That you're either real with that or you're not, because the crowd can see that in an instant and they'll notice that. And then all of a sudden they're going to say, oh, well, hold on a minute. That's a little bit too fake, but you can do that if you win. If you're not winning, that crowd's going to say, well, they want us, but they're not giving me, you know, enough of what we want. So, you know, there's a gentle balance there that, you know, to where everybody's got to get along.
And it seems like any crowd would spot that, but it seems you got to really be on it in New York, because that crowd will spot bullshit a mile away and you're not.
they've got enough of it, you know, there. So. But you're right. I mean, if you look at that crowd and the fans in there, I mean, they're tennis traditionalists. You know, they went to Forest Hills back when I first played back in the early 1970s. That are still going there and still love it. And then there are new fans, you know, that come because they can see two 18-year-olds going at it in the finals, or Djokovic going for the Grand Slam. That they're saying, well, I like this game. Let's go check it out and see what it's like. You know, so you got the ins and out of every fan, from golf to football to baseball to basketball to, you know, tennis to soccer to whatever, you know, that want to come and find out. The new fan wants to find out just what all the fuss is about. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, do they get it. They live that. You know, they live that every day. You know, the hustle and bustle of New York and the grind and you know, just what the city is, the action and everything that the city brings, good and bad. Yeah. You know, they live that every day. So, you know, for them to come to a tennis match, you know, I always felt for me, Brett, that was such an honor, you know, to have the blue collar worker come and want to be a part of tennis, because that wasn't tennis's reputation back then. Right. Tennis was more of a country club sport.
Yeah.
So it was that was an honor to, you know, like I said last time, I like the guy who pulled up in his concrete mixer and came out and bought a ticket to see if he played tennis. That, you know, that was my kind of fan. And you know, that's the fans that showed up for the finals of the women's.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the fans, the New Yorkers, can spot, you know, BS a mile away. So they like watching through the course of the US Open, you know, the first few rounds, first week, you know, who is acclimating well to it, who's in the interviews talking about enjoying the city or taking the subway, or, you know, and then there's people who don't like it. There's people who don't like the hustle and the bustle, and they like the reserved, more quiet Wimbledon setup, you know, like Borg never won in New York. You know, Borg is the genteel, quiet, like, you know, cold assassin. And that, you know, for a long time has been more Wimbledon, more French Open, you know, like the raucous crowds are more maybe Australian in the US Open.
Right. Yeah.
So I think the people there, because you're right, they're engaged in it. They get up, they're on the train, they're going to work, they're around it. You know, it's constant chaos in New York, but you get used to it and you live in it. So the players that can acclimate to it and do well in it, they gravitate towards, because then they go, oh, you know, he gets it. He's one of us, or she gets it. She's one of us. You know, mm-hmm. Well, here, like they say, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. So if you can win the US Open, you can go win anywhere. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You think, and just think of the confidence that gives, and, you know, you just said it there. I mean, they write songs about it. They make movies about it, you know, and just of what New York has to offer if they accept you.
Yeah.
And they have to accept you first, and to be accepted there. You know, and I look back, Brett, you know, over my years there from the beginning, I wasn't accepted at the beginning, but we worked it out and we ended up having a great relationship, the fans and myself, but they have to
talk about that. What do you think it was up until that point? Cause what, it's 1978, you beat Borg in the finals, the first final, at Flushing Meadows. It had just moved the previous year. You give a speech afterwards on court and you say something. What do you say?
Well, I said, you may not like me, but I like you.
Right.
But it all changed in that January of 78 when I played the Masters in Madison Square Garden, and I beat Borg in the final there. And you know, my attitude was different. When the way I approached my game and the way I approached tennis, my attitude and a lot of things I did was different. It was, I wasn't from a country club. I was a public park kid and grew up that way. And so maybe that was, different than Forest Hills was used to. So, and that crowd, you know, and back then you have to remember, we were fighting to get more people in, even though Forest Hills was established, the US Open was established in a main event, we were still fighting to get people in. And I don't think, you know, we didn't get along at the beginning because they didn't know if I was real or not. I had to prove myself to be real, you know, and that I wasn't just out there doing that just to do it, that what I did and my attitude, my feelings about the game and the way I played it was real and was me. And I think once they understood that and I understood them, that they didn't want to come, they wanted to come and be a part of it, but they wanted to, you know, tennis was one thing, bringing them in was another thing, and making them a part of what I did. And listen, I step over the line a few times? Yes, I did. You know, but that wasn't fake. You know, that and I think once they realized that was, you know, my personality and what helped me play better and be who I was, we got along just fine. And you know, if I say it took 20 years for them to give me what they gave me in 1991, it was worth it. I mean, that was beyond anything that I ever expected in the game, but to have that come from New York and the crowds there, that was, it was time for me to go then after that. I don't think I could have matched that. Huh?
Can't get much better. I mean, this, you know.
No, it was time. And I'd done, you know, I paid my dues. I'd played for 22 years and about that. And you know, keeping up with those young guys and, you know, trying to, you know, train and do what it took to still produce good tennis was getting harder and harder by the day. You know, so I can identify very easily with Federer or with Nadal, with Djokovic, even though he's only, I think, 34, maybe 35. I identify very well with what it takes getting older and trying to compete. It's no easy task. And, you know, the extra effort that you have to put in is, you know, if you want to do it, it's worth it. But it gets tougher and tougher every day.
Yeah. Well, before we get to Djokovic and all and the men's side, I want to go back to 78 because I think it's interesting because Djokovic talked and had kind of a little moment in his speech afterwards where, you know, he kind of broke down and, you know, you could see how much it meant to him. But I think it's very like almost like fate that in 78, it goes from Forest Hills to Flushing Meadows, right?
Yeah.
Who wins the first U.S. Open at Flushing Meadows? You do, right?
Right.
Who do you beat? Borg, right?
Borg. Mm-hmm.
So it goes from the genteel, soft grass of Forest Hills to the hard concrete, like, mess of Flushing Meadows. And then you play, not the soft, but the grass court, the more reserved, the, you know, the quiet kind of assassin Borg in the final on the hard court, you know, right. And then you make that speech afterwards and then the fans like see it. Like, you know what I mean? It's almost like this transition moment where the US Open goes from what it like used to be to what you make it, like what you take it and make it. You're like, look, I know it's been this, guys. I know you think I might be full of shit and I'm just a flash in the pan or whatever, but I'm here to stay. I'm going to be here on the clay, the grass and the hard court. And you know what I mean? And I'm one of you. And I think they saw that in that moment where you're, you know, sitting there with the trophy and Borg is, you know, quiet and reserved and you're not quiet and reserved. And you're like, I can relate to Connors. You know, New York's not quiet and reserved, you know? So in that moment, it's like this perfect like storm of things that happen. And of like, of course you had to win. Of course you had to be the first winner on the hard court.
Right. Well, you know what? That's a good point. That's exactly the way I felt too. When they left they went from grass to clay over at Forest Hills. And then once they went over to hard courts at Flushing Meadows, that was really my game. That fit me better than anything. And you know, so to go in, I knew when I walked in that stadium, I said, I got to win here. The first year it's here, I got to win here. That was a point of view from the very beginning of that year for me. And the reason I say that is because that is something that I'll remember forever. You know, that I won that first tournament that went over to Flushing Meadows. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, I remember the walk from the country club, from the clubhouse at Forest Hills, walk across the grass to the stadium. I mean, it was such a beautiful walk, you know, and you know, I remember going with, you know, with Pancho and, you know, talking to him as we go. I mean, it wasn't a hustle and, you know, my shoulders weren't up and, you know, and come on, let's go. And somebody wasn't going on my back. Come on, Connors, you know, you got this, or, you know, hope you lose or whatever. It was, you know, hey, how you doing? You know, and kind of much more low key, even though the importance was still there. Don't get me wrong. The importance was still there, but it was just a different feeling from breaking out of the locker room at Flushing Meadows breaking into 6,000 people, and you know the crowd kind of parts so that we can walk through, and you got the feeling of what they were expecting and what they were looking forward to before you even got to the court, you know, and if you couldn't get up to play then, wow, you know, something was wrong, you know. So I think a lot of the kids today, I wish they would have been able to, whether they to see it or at least experience it, you know, what that was like back in the day, because now, you know, so many things have happened over the past, you know, 20 years. Now you come out of a tunnel and, you know, you break up onto the court, nobody's near you, nobody's around you. I mean, people were, you know, so close. I mean, you know, they could have jumped on my back and, you know, ridden into the stadium if they wanted to.
But well, yeah, I put out a picture from Wimbledon in 91 where you were out on court like 17 or something. You played Krikstein in the second round. And afterwards, you shake hands and you're putting your stuff away. And everybody in the crowd, like, just comes on the court, like all around you.
Yeah.
You barely see you. You know, you're like, there he is. It's Where's Waldo? You know? But like, it's this amazing moment where you're like, how cool is that? Like, every fan there thinks that's cool. You think that's cool. The only person who didn't was poor Krikstein walking back to the locker room, you know, because he lost. But, you know, and I put it up. And of course, you know, it didn't take 2 seconds forever. Monica Seles moment. And you're like, yeah, I get it. Like, I understand it. But think about how much is being missed because of that, you know, because of that one dude. And obviously you have to take care and be safe. I get all that, but it's just tragic because now the game seems like further apart, you know,
so far away.
Everyone always says, what's everyone's favorite event all year? Indian Wells. The players are right there. They're playing soccer. You think they sign autographs? They're eating right there. They want to see them. They want to be near them. They want to be around the players.
Right.
U.S. Open, like you said, they're in a tunnel. They're underground. They come up, you know, they don't even want them signing autographs now because of COVID. So it's like, dude, the fans and the players are more further separated than ever. And it's a bummer because you players get something out of it, because I know you did. And they get something out of it. You know, I put up stuff and people are like, I was there in 91. I snuck down 6 different times against McEnroe. When you played McEnroe, they're like, I started in the top row, I snuck down to the 12th row, then the 8th, the 6th, and by the end of the match I had front row seats, you know. And like, those stories are great, and like, they still exist, but it's just a little different nowadays, and it's a bummer that, you know, it has to be that way.
Yeah, but you know, listen, you know, I get everything that's happened over the years, and you know, with Monica and the stabbing and how things changed there. Then 9/11 changed everything. And, you know, so, I mean, there's so many, you know, it's not problems, not a problem, but, you know, to take the fan out of it, you know, to me.
Precautions.
Yeah.
They take all these precautions essentially to lawsuits. It's like a lot in the big world.
it's too bad. It's too bad, but the, you know, the good thing about it is, you know, what we got out of the U.S. Open with the great final, you know, 6-4, 6-3, but the, you know, the opportunity that those two young ladies had was tremendous, and the way they handled themselves, not only on the court but also afterwards, and the speeches that they gave, and if that's the future of women's tennis, that's not too damn bad.
No,
you know, for more reasons than just hitting the ball back and forth. That's pretty good.
Yeah, they seem like good ambassadors, good kids, and fun tennis players to watch. I'll be interested to see how they handle the success, because like, I'm always somebody who, when somebody young has some success, usually there's a little dip. They like, you know, celebrate or they enjoy their, you know, success, and maybe let a little of it go to their head, or they're not used to how to deal with it. And then it takes them a little bit of time to come back. So it'd be cool to see how these players do, especially like in Indian Wells in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. I hope they don't get caught up in the, I mean, that's their first major, the first win and the first final. I hope they don't get caught up in all the hype. You know, all of a sudden now you've got this commercial to do, this company to go work for. You know, you got to make this appearance. You know, you got to remember that if you don't win those tennis matches, all those sponsors are going to go bye-bye. Mm-hmm. You know, so I hope they continue to remember what the important thing is, and that's their performance and their play on the court. And then if they win, everything else will come. Mm-hmm. It's not get this and then try to win. If you win, everything's going to come naturally. And I'm sure they do. I'm sure they got the right people around them and to guide them and to lead them, through all that. So all the best to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited to see. It's cool to have two new stars. And like I said, I'm a Fernandez fan anyway, so I like rooting for her, and we'll see how they do the rest of the year. But moving to the men, what did you think? I think it kind of played out. I mean, they must have listened to our podcast. We said, look, we want some next gen to sack up and beat Djokovic on the way to winning their first slam. And what? Right.
Well, I mean, I think first of all, Joker had a tough draw, mm-hmm. from the very beginning. And even though I think he lost a set in pretty much every match on the way to the final. So, and then he was a five setter against Zverev. There's another young guy, even though he didn't win the match, he was playing. It was 6-3, 6-4 in the fifth, and he was out there giving it his all, which you're expecting him to do anyway. But he played the kind of tennis that the young generation should play and should push Djokovic to have to play to beat him. And then Medvedev, he played pretty spectacular throughout the course of the whole tournament. I think maybe he lost one set along the way. And when he went in to that final, I mean, you could see there are certain points where in the second set where he won a game, I think, to go up 5-3 or something in the second set, he's just kind of going, he's walking back, just kind of going like, because he had a good relationship with the crowd in the match that he lost to Nadal a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. You remember,
yep.
They were all, he's saying, that's okay. You can treat me any way you want to, but just treat me, yeah. And played a great five set match there. So he was no newcomer to playing on that court in the final, but he was, to play that kind of tennis is almost like he beat Novak at his own game.
Yeah.
Just staying back. I mean, the defense that he played, and I going back though, I'm going to say two things. One, Joker had a long five setter in the semifinal.
Yeah.
That might have taken a little bit out of him. He looked a little flat. I'm taking nothing away from Medvedev. That happens. Yeah. Happens to everybody.
Yeah.
But and then here's one little gripe I might have with the tournament is that why wouldn't you just play? I know there's a day rest now in between, but why wouldn't you just play a to follow? So have the first semifinal, then a semifinal to follow, because playing a night match, they played a five setter. He probably didn't get home till 2:33 in the morning.
Right.
What would be wrong with a to follow to kind of give everybody the same amount of time to recuperate?
Yeah.
And to get ready for the Sunday final.
Back in
the day though, Brett, the final, the semifinal was on Saturday and then the final was on Sunday. So, there was no rest in between.
No, I think you're right though. I think, it's a few things. I think it's interesting because once Joker won Wimbledon, then everyone started talking about the Golden Slam. Mm-hmm. And when he had his chances to come through, he didn't choke, but he just didn't come through. He lost and didn't even get a medal in Tokyo, and then losing in the final to Med. I think you're right though. I think his draw was tough. He played that kid Brooksby. He lost a set in every match except one, his second round. You're right. He played a tough match against the kid Brooksby, which was four sets, Then he had Berrettini, four sets, Zverev, five sets, and then Medvedev waiting there. And not only Medvedev waiting there, but Medvedev waiting there with a pretty easy draw. If you really think about it, he played Felix in the semis. Felix is like 0-9 in finals. Like Felix isn't there yet, So get Felix in a semis, first Grand Slam semis, kind of a gift. And then he had the qualifier, Vanda, I don't know how to say the guy's name, Schloop, which he beat in four sets. And before that he had like Evans, so it's not like he had a tough match along the way that would take his legs out. We saw to him in Tokyo, he started kind of cramping. He got tired if it's hot. He even said that at like 5-3, the other day against Joker, he was starting to cramp a little. So he's like, if he had just gotten another game or broke back, like, or gotten to a, you know, five all or something, he might have started cramping if Joker gets that third set.
No, boy.
But, you know, it's interesting. You're right. He beat him at his own game because he's a 6'5", 6'6", dude who can come in and out of the corners on both sides, forehand, backhand side. And when he's rolling, he just goes. He takes the ball, big serve. Takes the ball, big serve, forehand winner. Takes the ball. You know, I mean, it's almost like methodical. It's almost like you blink and three games have gone by. And you're like, I don't even know what I saw. So, I mean, I like Medvedev. I think it's cool that he won. I think he's the guy who kind of deserves to win, to do it. You know, team won last year, but he didn't have to beat Joker along the way. And he's not there this year, so he didn't have a shot. But Medvedev seems to have put in his dues. Like you said, he made the final a couple years ago against Nadal, made the final in Australia earlier this year to Djokovic. So, I mean, he's put in the, you know, he's taken his steps, put in the dues, and it seems like, you know, it was his time.
Yeah, I'm happy for him. And you know, he brought his game to the finals no matter what. You know, I think, you know, my opinion, I think it would have been a good match no matter what. You know, no matter if Joker would have been at the top of his game, I still think they would have had a hell of a match. Mm-hmm. You know, but looking back, I mean, you know, Joker having a chance to win the Grand Slam, you know, at least he had a chance to play for it. Yeah. you know, that's a good thing. You know, he won Australia, he won the French, he won Wimbledon, and he comes into the U.S. Open and having a chance to play for it. You know, I go back to 74, Bretter. You know, I won Australia, you know, and when I was kept out of playing the French, you know, I knew in June that I wasn't going to win the Grand Slam. I knew that. And then I went on and won Wimbledon and the U.S. Open. We talked about that. But at least he had a chance to play for it. I would have loved to have had a chance to play for it.
What do you think that would have been like? Because I mean, he almost did it. He got all the way to the finals. They didn't do him any justice. I mean, he had to play hard players. I mean, Berrettini, Zverev, and Medvedev. Yeah. There's no Nadal.
He had a tough draw.
Yeah. So, well, what do you think that would have been like? Would you have enjoyed knowing that, like, I'm getting closer to this goal? Would it have become heavier? Like, how do you think you would have dealt with it?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think back then I was on such a roll. You know, I think, you know, there's sometimes where you think you can stand on your head and play. You know, that's where I was over the course of that year, that, you know, nothing was bothering me. And you know, I had no reserve, no inhibitions about, you know, going out and playing, you know, my kind of tennis. And you look at a year like that, you know, lucky to get maybe two or three matches where you play to perfection. I had a year's worth of almost perfection, you know, which is crazy to even think about that. But
93 and four that year.
Well, I mean, that's a little crazy. That's 99 and four.
Is it 99 and four?
Yeah, it was 99, you know, but that's crazy. I played 103 matches.
That's crazy.
You know, that, you know, over the course of that year. So, That's a lot of tournaments. Guys don't play that many tournaments these days anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a lot of matches to play. But you know, thinking back,
especially when they had such good planning as, let's have Sydney at the end of October, send everyone home and bring them back for the Australian Open in the middle of December. It's not that long a flight. Like,
what? Yeah. It was a little bit crazy scheduling. You know, but it's interesting. I look back and, you know, after the U.S. Open, my year was about over. And then from there, I wanted to play some tournaments where I wanted to go and that gave big guarantees. Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. They're not going to kick me out of tennis for saying that, are they?
Well,
too late.
Oh, didn't they already do that? No, just kidding.
Yeah, I think they did.
Well, what did they call it? They used to call that in the golf, the funny money season, or what was it called?
The funny money. That's right. You know, so where you went.
That time of year was almost four. It was like the big tournaments were over. Now you go do exhibitions and a couple little tournaments, and then you have your vacation time.
Right. And, you know, we had to figure out a way to make a living back then too, which is, you know, wasn't making that great a living in the tournament. So you had to figure something else out. I'm going back. I'm happy for Medvedev and for Zverev.
Yeah.
You know, the way he sacked up too. You know, he didn't you know, just roll over and say, oh, I'm playing Joker in the semis. He's going to win anyway. He fought till the end. And so that's the next generation's, you know, we bitch about it every time, you know, and now I'm not bitching.
No,
I'm not going to this now.
Because you can, we're not allowed to.
No, but I'm proud of them.
Yeah, for
I'm
sure.
Proud of both of them. You know, that to sack up like that. And you know, even though he didn't win, it was five sets. He gave it his all. That's all you can ask.
Yep.
Every time to go and play with no fear. Doesn't matter who it is. And to give it everything you've got, walk off of there with your head high. He did that.
Yep.
And you know, and then Medvedev to play that match, you know, so he's got to put a little check by that match. It's probably one of the best he'll ever play.
Right.
You know, under the circumstances.
What do you
think? Let me just say this. What kind of pressure do you think he was under?
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, that if he'd have lost, he's the guy that lost the final match for Joker to win the Grand Slam.
Yeah.
You know, there's a little pressure there too.
Yeah, for sure. He's almost defending his generation, Dimitrov's generation, Sinner's generation. You know what I mean? It's like these like three generations of guys who are just like still losing to Djokovic, essentially, now that Fed's out and Nadal's not there. Yeah. I think it's cool the way it played out. I was texting with somebody and they're like, oh, I don't want Joker to win. They're like, who do you want to win? I was like, I think the best thing would be if Joker makes the final and then he loses to one of the young guys, because then you have the storyline of him having the shot, you know, which you can ride all tournament. And then you have, and then if the young guy can't beat him, he deserves it. And if the young guy beats him, then that's a great storyline too.
Right. And yeah. That's
kind of how it played out. And so
situation, really.
Right. Yeah. And tennis, for as much as they crush Djokovic and everyone says they don't like this about him and that and all that stuff, tennis has been riding him this whole year and his Grand Slam storyline. You know, right. Like half the time they're knocking him over the head, the other half the time they're using him for their advertisements and promotions and riding him, you know. So it's like, I don't know. I'm becoming more a little bit of a fan of his just because so many people are knocking him so much and he doesn't seem to be that bad a guy. And he's a lot of fun to watch as a tennis player. And, you know, you might not see somebody going for 20 slams and a grand slam again, ever, at least in our lifetime. So you might as well enjoy it while he's here.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm becoming a bigger fan all the time too. And the reason I say that is because, you know, I look back, not everybody can be Federer and Nadal, you know, the way they are. I like Djokovic, you know, going off the handle a little bit,
right?
You know, and being a little different than the other guys, you know, what right or wrong. Listen, there is no right or wrong.
No,
it is what it is at the moment, because, and I keep going back and saying this, not many people invite 25,000 people and millions upon millions of people into their office on a daily basis, you know, and to play under that kind of pressure. Mm-hmm. And all that does is make me kind of respect him a little bit more to say, listen, things aren't good all the time, you know, out here. Nothing runs perfect. I'm not playing 100% of my tennis abilities right now. I got to fight through this. You know, I'm getting my ass kicked by a kid that's 8 or 9 years younger than me. Listen, things aren't going right. You know, I'm going to show you that, because I guarantee you that everybody that's sitting in those stands have felt that same way.
Right.
You know, and they can identify with that. You know, yeah. So you know, it's like, you know, we talked about it just right before we're doing this. You said it, that, you know, he's a tennis player.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going, I don't need to know his views on the vaccine, world peace, right. You know.
Yeah, I'm only tuning in to watch him play tennis.
Right.
Like, he's a really, yeah, really great tennis player. The other, right, stuff, he can have his opinions. I'm just watching him play tennis.
Yeah.
To start bringing in everyone's geopolitical views into whether or not we're a fan of how they play tennis. It might not like anybody, you know.
No. That's right. Yeah. Hey, but listen, I was happy to see fans back in the stands at the U.S. Open, and you know, the excitement that the tournament brought. It had some really good storylines that will hopefully continue to push the game to another level. You know, women's tennis certainly, but you know, I'm disappointed again in the results of the U.S. players. I'm just disappointed, and you know, not to have any, you know, men or women players in the round of, I think one in the round of 16, maybe, I don't know, one man, one woman, to carry that. I mean, it's just.
Yeah, Brooksby.
Yeah, it's just.
Oh, Tiafoe. Now we had three made the fourth round with Tiafoe, Belka. But yeah, I know what you mean.
But I mean, I guess my point being is if you're looking at the fourth round as a, you know, is a good result, then, you know, maybe we're setting the bar a little too low.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's something that, you know, I hope sooner rather than later gets addressed, you know, and is able to work through, because could you imagine with Medvedev and Zverev and Tsitsipas and team, and with Joker still playing, and, you know, whether Federer and Nadal come back or not, you don't know. But if you could throw two or three top Americans in there that would, all right, let's say one. Okay. All right. I was going for, you know, a little bit more. But I mean, could you imagine that, you know, just the outside interest that would create, because you got the worldwide, you know, we're just missing this.
Yeah.
No, we're missing the U.S. where we ruled and dominated for 35 or 40 years.
Yeah.
And we're missing that now. And so, you know, I say it all the time, you know, they built that $600 million stadium to showcase foreign talent. And I don't say that disrespectfully to you know, the players that are playing, but I'm just saying that place was built on U.S. success, you know, from day one. And you know, it's a shame that it's still not there.
Yeah. I mean, the players who are out there are trying their ass off. You know that. It's just.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
Yeah. I think we just need great athletes to start picking up a tennis racket instead of a football, basketball, baseball bat. I just think we get spread so thin, not necessarily thin, but wide. You know, motocross, this, that, hockey, like so many sports here where you can make a lot of money. And then and then you see it because the women do fine, because the American women don't have as many options as where they can make millions of dollars playing a sport. So they get funneled into tennis and golf, you know. But with men, it's like, you're a really good athlete at 15. What sport, or 13? What sport do you want to play? You know, mm-hmm. I play tennis and soccer and golf and football. But then, like, as you get older, you start to narrow it into usually one sport. You know, and so we got to figure out a way to, when they narrow it, they pick tennis, you know, because we have great athletes. We have the best athletes. We have the Olympics. We win all these medals, and we're the world champions of sports where other countries don't even have it. We're the world champion of it.
You know, so do you think maybe that's because it's an individual sport that, you know, a lot of guys or a lot of athletes don't want to go into an individual sport. They like to have the help,
yeah.
You know, I think that has anything to do with it,
I think a little of it. I think half of it is they don't like, nobody wants to have all the pressure on themselves sometimes. Also, they like the camaraderie of playing, like you play a sport to be with your buddies and hang around your buddies. So that's, you get whipped up into that, and then you become a basketball or a middle relief baseball pitcher. But then I also think, isn't there like a chunk, 20% of the society who wants the pressure? Who feeds off that? Guys like you and Jordan and Kobe and, you know, Montana and Brady, these guys who will step on a throat to get to the trophy. Well, excuse me, you know,
right.
You know, I feel like there's gotta be a percentage of American athlete men who are like that, who would get into tennis. And then actually it's a good way to transition, because you brought it up. You said it doesn't seem to be hurting the American men in our other favorite sport that we like to talk about, golf.
No, isn't that the truth? I mean, you look at the youth that's playing great golf now. The majority of them are young Americans.
Right. Well, Patrick, you know, he just won FedEx Cup. We talked about him on the last show. He went on to win the FedEx Cup. 15 mil.
What? For one tournament? Grandma should have.
It's a lifetime achievement, okay?
Yeah, that's not so bad. Yeah, but wasn't it great though to see the way he won that, and the kind of golf that he played. But even though, listen to this, even though he shot 21 under, he started minus 10 because he was number one on the FedEx. The one who shot the best score was Xander Schauffele. He shot 12 under for the tournament, I think. So if they'd all started even, I think he would have won the FedEx Cup.
Okay.
It's crazy, but
he got the gold medal and cost me money. So who cares about that?
That's right. That's right. But look, there's another young American, Cantley, Schauffele, Spieth, Justin Thomas, Patrick Reed. I mean, oh my God. I mean, golf in the United States is at an all-time level high.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is. It's a good time. It's actually this group, this young group of guys has kind of brought me back into watching golf. I had kind of gotten away from it the last 10 or so years just because, I don't know, for a while there, it looks like, still a little bit like this. You turn it on and every dude looks almost like they're in a generic golf outfit uniform where they all look the same and they have the hat with the three sponsors, the shirt, the three sponsors, but I like a lot of the young guys. I like Justin Thomas's swing a lot. I really like Finau, Rom. I mean, he's not American, but I really love watching Rom play. Kepka, Deschambeau stuff is fun and entertaining. So it's actually a really entertaining and good time to get into golf and to watch it. So it's cool. I like watching. I like seeing the Americans do well.
Yeah, speaking of golf, I could stay here and talk to you all day, but I'm going to leave in about 10 minutes because I got a golf lesson. So, hey, by the way, I mean, your view behind you looks different. What's up?
A little barren. Yeah, we finally moved after 6 years in my last apartment, moved a little inland away from the beach to a bigger apartment. So we've been dealing with that for the last week. It was a little bit of a mess, but did that. Had movers moving in, told us that they couldn't get our couch into the apartment. So that we had to essentially abandon our couch. That's what the couch is sitting out on the front of the apartment, waiting for sanitation to come pick it up.
Well, I guess it's time to get a new one.
We got a makeshift couch with pillows and bean bags on the floor, and Bella's loving it. So it's good.
That's not so bad.
Yeah.
That's not so bad. Well, it's been good to be with you, bud. I know you're probably starting work again pretty soon too, right?
Yeah, we got some stuff. Next week's busy. And then Indian Wells comes up in like 2.5-3 weeks. So,
wow. Is that the same Indian Wells that's usually back in March? It is, right?
Are they going to play? It's going to be like French Open where they play it in October and then they have it again, right away next year.
Well, there you go. Open up those restaurants and those bars and start playing some tunes and, going to Palm Springs is not a bad destination to go to anyway. So I'm sure it'll be a good week.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I mean, it's good. They didn't have it last year. So it is a good tournament and it's Southern California's. Uh-oh, did I lose you?
No, I'm here. I'm getting a call.
Okay.
Hold on a minute.
Getting a call. Probably Shingo wondering where you are for the lesson.
Yeah, there we go. I'm back. Sorry. I'm back. But anyway, it's been good. So I'll be trying to come down there. We got to go to our favorite restaurant. So I'll give you a call when I'm down and we'll hit Nan Bon Con and have a good dinner.
Sounds good. Everyone can follow us on social media, Twitter at @ADVConnors, at @AdvantageConnors on Instagram, YouTube channel at @AdvantageConnors. You can follow me at @Brett_Connors. He's at @JimmyConnors. Anything else? Any final words?
Yeah, if come on down to the Boca Raton down in Boca Raton, Florida for my fantasy camp, November 12th to 14th.
November 12th to 14th?
Yeah, of this year. It's about 2 months away. And for a fun weekend of lots of tennis and cocktails and dinner and just a good time with all the amenities the hotel has to offer. So if you want to get away for a weekend, come join me for my fantasy camp.
Sounds good. November 12th through the 14th, we'll be putting more information out on your social media so people can check it out once it gets a little closer. But everything else is good, and we'll talk to you soon. Peace.
Good being with you.